Well, it sounds like it makes for effective administration of this method.
Well, when you finally learn to accept it for yourself, and know this is the way you work best, then things get done a lot faster than if you're trying to do, you know, management by objective or counseling or this or that or the next thing. When you learn what you do and how you do it well, then you're more comfortable yourself.
Well, the other person I was interested in was your relations with Chester Rudisilli, for instance, mm-hmm. and his activities.
Well, I suppose there was always a little strain between the Dean of Women and the Dean of Men's Office, or the Dean of Students Office, and the Academic Dean's Office, particularly in liberal arts, letters
and
science.
I'm thinking of the College of Letters and Science.
Yeah, because it's the biggest. I suppose there was always a little strain there. You know, whose turf was which?
Well, that's what I'm curious about. Uh-huh. How was this resolved or worked out?
Well, I believe it was worked out with some general guidelines that matters that were of academic origin, certainly the responsibility of the LNS office, that matters that were across the board, the way a student lived, what they did, in their residence units, and their activities were more or less the major responsibility of the dean's offices. And hardly any problem could come up in the LNS office or in our office that was a serious one that you didn't get involved with each other. And if you had, what we tried to work out and what we did work out, I was the kind of relationship that when you got to the point where you were into the other major areas of responsibility, if we were working with something and it became apparent that academic part of this was involved, then a phone call. And there was lots of phoning back and forth between Chet and Chan and all the people up there and the Dean of Women's Office, and that was one of the things I felt I had to train all the people who came to work for me to get them acquainted with the people in the LNS office so that there could be this kind of exchange and that you didn't have to, they didn't have people. I hope always, our goal, perhaps I best say it that way, our goal was that the student wouldn't be shortchanged because of any conflicts between the two offices in trying to handle a problem. And so we tried to get the two people who were working with it, and we tried to alert our staffs that if you came to something where the other person was involved, you got in touch with the other person. And the best examples, the best, when it was working best, we could stumble on an academic problem and discuss it with the LNS office, and they would say, you go ahead and handle it. You're doing it all right. There's no need that that person has to come see anyone over here until a little later on. If finally what do you work out is they want permission to drop Geography 1, then they'll have to come and see us. But we don't need to get involved in all of these pros and cons that you're dealing with. And when it worked best, it worked the same way. Someone would call from the LNS office. I remember exchanges with Herbie Howe when he was handling the Ford scholars, those young ones on campus. They'd call and say, this person is involved with their house mother or her student governing group or with somebody that's having these kinds of problems. And we wouldn't say, you got to send them over to talk with us. We'd try to give advice on how we would handle it in their spot, and if they could do it, they did it. So that was the best kind of relationship. It didn't always work. And sometimes we got into things that we were the responsibility of the dean's office, and sometimes they got into things that were our responsibility, and then you'd have kind of a blow up with everyone yelling at each other for a few minutes, and then you'd calm down and say, well, we can be mad at each other, but, you know, let's not get this kid caught in the crossfire. Let's try to straighten it out for that person. I think the times that it tended to be most difficult to handle was when someone, a parent perhaps, got upset and went directly to the president. And then the president's office would start calling, and then, of course, that created tensions out there. And was it the L&S office that had fallen flat on its face, or was it the dean of women's office, or the dean of men's? So there was a potential there for difficulty. But I guess it may be in retrospect, although there were moments you worried about it, and worrying about, was this the best administration? And they did, and we did, you know. And when you start worrying about, then you always wanted to accept more responsibility yourself and take something away from them. We can handle it better. And they would say, oh, we can handle it better. When you got into those moments. But my guess is that arrangement was a pretty good example of enough tension to be productive. Wow. Keep the thing alive and alert. With as long as we had the kind of people we had there that uh-huh. would work with each other. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't easy, and it wasn't enough. Minnesota had a nice, straightforward, well-organized relationship. It worked like a clock. Everyone knew where to go. And sometimes that was the most sterile system, it seemed to me, in dealing with students. You couldn't say that in Wisconsin. Wisconsin wasn't centralized in that sense. And yet it was productive. It was lively and was concerned about students. And you learned to appreciate each other, too. You're mentioning Chet Rudicelli. Chet operated in quite a different way from Chan or from me. But you understood each other, too, in the strengths and the weaknesses and the style. And it was a matter of knowing people, trusting them.
Knowing them well enough to, mm-hmm. to be able to work out yeah. a good arrangement, yeah. a good mm-hmm. give and take on mm-hmm. situations which varied greatly, I guess.
One of the things that sticks in my mind as an anecdote, a young woman came in one day. She was transferring from the University of Wisconsin to a little college in Winfield, Kansas, a church college in Winfield, Kansas. And in order to be there for the start of the second term, she needed to leave Madison the day before finals were over. So she needed a final move early. And she'd gone several places. And she'd been turned down every place. She came into my office and said, this is totally unreasonable. They let dozens of people. I could go to another section and take the test. They're giving it early. Totally unreasonable. I've been turned down by this person and that person, and I'm going to be late. Oh, she was in tears. I spent a little time looking at her and realized that she was the kind of young woman that just the way she did all of this made you want to say no to her. She kind of whined her way into it. And she did the other thing, probably is unforgivable. She kept saying how this experience at Wisconsin, you know, all of us heathens, and she was going to this good, pure Christian college, and we really should let her out of this environment as soon as possible so she could get down where it was good and pure and Christian. She had been turned down by her professor. She'd been turned down by Chet Rudicelli. She'd been turned down every place she'd gone. She hit my office. And my reaction was, well, so you came here, so these are the rules, so you stay and take the test. And then in the midst of it, I thought, this is unfair. We do it for other students. And it's unfair just because she's really got a very disagreeable disposition and has approached this in absolutely the wrong way. This is unfair. So I sent her out of the office and called Chet Rudicelli, as I recall it, and told him my reaction. I said, Chet, I think her request is reasonable, but I think none of us can stand her. We just don't want to say yes, that she can do what we're letting other people do. Well, Chet explained all the reasons, read me the rules, that you couldn't move your final. And then finally at the end, he started laughing and he said, you know, you're absolutely right. We're letting dozens of students do this every term. Send her back and I'll give her permission. Well, that happened a lot to students. at Wisconsin. And I've had their office called, the Nina Women's office, and say, you're just being real old maid about this. There's no reason in the world this can't happen. And so it was a good kind of balance for the students. But there were troublesome moments, too.
Well, it's hard to imagine that there wouldn't be.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'd like your reflections on one aspect of all of this. When you started, there was a dean of women, mm-hmm, and a dean of men. Then there was an administrative changeover, and these categories no longer existed, and you had a division of student affairs, a new division, and a dean of students instead of a dean of women and a dean of men, which personally seems to me to make better sense. Does it make better sense in actual functioning, according to your opinion?
Well, let me say, status as objectively as it can, the reasons I saw that it was good to have a dean of women. There weren't women in administration. And this was one way to guarantee at least one woman in a university administration. Maybe that's no great merit, but I think there was something to be said for it, both in what the person contributed and the fact that other women who aspired for that kind of thing saw that at least there was one chance of their doing some administrative kind of work at a level where they would be recognized. I did not buy much that women thought differently and could understand women better, although there was a period when the dean of women's job grew up that I'm sure women's students felt more comfortable going to deans of women about certain problems than they did going to men about those problems. But that sort of went out, I think, with World War II. But there was a period when it was justified on that. That was not true in World War II. I didn't buy the dean of women's position on the basis of the dean of women would then make enforcing, help colleges keep rules that would protect women. In this world, women don't need to be protected. They need to be prepared to hold their own on an equal basis.
Most of the time, they don't want to be protected,
yeah,
in this sense.
So that argument I didn't buy, but the argument that this at least provided an opportunity for women that didn't seem otherwise to exist in that period, and that did involve women in the administration, I suppose that with a chauvinistic attitude, I would state another point, that the women I knew who were deans of women on the whole were certainly quite able, quite unusual women, and many of the deans of men were not that able, so that it was a way also, and I'm not speaking here personally, but across that, if this is the one position that a woman could have in the university, in the college, that was at an administrative level, and if most of the college was made up of men professors and so on and so forth, the dean of men sometimes turned out to be the one that couldn't do anything else. The dean of women was very carefully selected.
So this accounts for the overall difference, you think?
I think it may. And I look at the University of Chicago and Northwestern and Illinois and a lot of others, and there were just great women at that period in these particular positions. And so there was that kind. That was the situation, the temporary situation. And when you talk about it philosophically, I think it's better to do it in a coeducational institution in a dean's student's office. But what I think many deans of women fear was that the dean of students would always be a man. Mm-hmm. And then this channel would be shut off. Well, fortunately for us, which came first? I think the dean of women's position was abandoned in most institutions about the time that it became apparent that women could be deans of students too. So when that became possible, then there was not really much argument left for having the dean of men and the dean of women.
So there really wasn't that kind of a loss.
I don't think there was.
What were the gains of having dean of students instead of women and men?
The fact that it pulled together the whole, didn't create, well, we had it at Wisconsin, didn't create a tension between dean of men and dean of women and an argument that women had to wear, and this is the way most people saw it, although in the latter years it wasn't true, that the dean of women was defending maidenhood and virtue and the dean of men was defending drinking and loose living, the macho versus the feminine and all of that. That kind of an argument, but it did exist on many campuses. Uh-huh. And when you got on a campus, and I think of a couple of them that I knew fairly well, where the dean of men was clearly not of caliber and not respected as the dean of women, that created other tensions. And so I just think it made more sense to eliminate those, and I had no problems at all. I held on long to the concept of dean of women until I was pretty sure that there were going to be other ways that women would get involved and have opportunities.